It was cold when I first started recording these. It was positively freezing out here. And now it's humid. Time sure passes. And not all that much time either. These haven't been weekly installments. I believe they've gone up something like every 4 days. But of course I'm first starting out here. And I'm trying to develop a base, a collection, something to sample besides just one or two. And so here it is, number 7. And I still can't stand trucks. I'll rephrase that. I can't stand the noise they make when I'm sitting here recording, but I haven't found a better spot. I should come out here and take a picture of it. I think I will. I'll come out, take a picture, and show you just where it is. These outdoor segments of International Detective Dragons from Outer Space are being recorded. So, Transmission 7. What shall we talk about? I would say we. I understand it's not we. I know it's not we. I know it's me blathering on here as if I'd never stop. But if I tried interviewing these trees, let's put it this way, they wouldn't lie about anything. I think I'm going to have to draw from episode 1 and pull out an old subject that was never dealt with, in depth anyway. I went a little bit into it, and that was the afterlife, specifically for IDDFOS 7. The question will be, what would be your idea of heaven? The question itself and the exploration of the subject, of course, is relying on, oh, truck, go away. Relying heavily on a lot of assumptions. One, the assumption that there is a life after death, a survival of intelligence, personality, will, you, and the assumption that there actually is anything like a heaven. So assuming that an eternal reward, and that's a key aspect of the question too, we're talking about eternity here, because let's just keep classic with this. If you could select your eternal reward, if it wasn't dependent on traditional Sunday school notions of what it's supposed to be or purported to be, but if you lived a stellar and exemplary life and you managed to get in the club and you were allowed to pick your very own version, anything, absolutely anything you could think of, what would it be? And our supplementary question, again for number 7, also pulls from, actually does it? I don't even know if I ever mentioned this. I'd have to go back and listen. Oh, I sure don't want to do that. Well, I'll just state the question anyway. If you were to have a t-shirt, if in the afterlife, let's say you're in the waiting room to get into your perfect heaven, and you are wandering around, mingling, mixing it up, networking with the other afterlife people that also got in the club, and you couldn't speak, but you had to be identified only by an emblem, a symbol, or a set of words readable by everyone on your t-shirt, what would you put there? How would you identify yourself? What would you put as who you are on a t-shirt in the afterlife? I think we could safely call that a second contest. We had a somewhat gross first contest designing the packaging for that product called Urangon. That's a little gross. That was a little distasteful, or could be to some people. This one not only is probably a lot more interesting, But it's also a lot easier to do, depending on what you choose. If it's a set of words, now you have to remember, someone isn't going to stand there and read the fine print on your t-shirt as if it were an essay printed there. We're talking about probably at maximum 4 or 5 sentences, absolute maximum. Preferably a single sentence or just 2 sentences to describe you and your life and how you identify yourself. That's some challenge, I think. That's one hell of a contest. Right about now, I think I'd put on my t-shirt, "Hated Noisy Trucks." And that'd be a risk-taking maneuver because waiting around to get into my version of heaven, Snooty Patootie would come along and punch me right in the nose. Or not. So what about it? I came close to probably what would be my version of a pleasant way to spend eternity, that being the access and ability to read a full library consisting of the acquired knowledge of the universe, everything that ever has happened or will happen. Boy, they just know when I'm out here, don't they? Anything that has happened or ever will happen in all of the universe throughout time. I mean, if I have to spend an eternity, I'd certainly want it to be something I'd want to do or be interested in and wouldn't get bored with. But what would I put on my t-shirt? I think it'd probably be 3 sentences in the past tense. I didn't really, you know, honestly, I didn't really think about this ahead of time. And there was one hell of a stretch of silence there that I cut out as I was going over my part. And of course, I'm ineligible to be a part of the contest. And once again, the winner of the contest wins. That's about it. But I would put 3 sentences in the past tense in big bold letters. Could have done more. Spent too much time afraid, just didn't get it. I think that'd about sum it up for me. What about you, though? Responses to, please send responses to anim5 at anim5.com if you've missed all of the other podcasts. Anim, the first 4 letters of the word animation, and the number 5. Anim5 at anim5.com. That's the email address. And the website, of course, is www.anim5.com. Once that loads, look for the little yellow dummy. Click on him, and it'll take you to the homepage of International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. I'm sorry. It's more in the vehicle stuff. It's a time thing, like I said. We're doing another one of them shopping runs. Don't worry, Adam. It's time well spent. You are to be congratulated for taking advantage of those free moments when podcasting can be accomplished, no matter where you are. Even if you were at the floor of a volcano or dancing around on the wing of an airplane, why, we're sure you'd have something interesting to say. And so, go to it. Let us call this the Sleep Deprivation Podcast, number 7. I bet for some people, their idea of heaven would simply be some place where they could just get some sleep. Where they could go to sleep whenever they wanted to, for as long as they wanted to, and wake up whenever they felt like it. I think that'd be heaven enough for some people. Not terribly exciting, but certainly relaxing. My father used to ponder the idea that heaven was Earth. I'm starting to wonder If it's if that's Gaelic or a Scottish or an Irish popular concept from a long time ago or not. Because I've seen it carried over in at least one work of fiction. I highly recommend this one. It's called The We Free Men by Terry Pratchett. If you read it already, you know exactly what I'm talking about. If you haven't, it's certainly worth your time. It's very tough to recommend books. Going from my own experience, I almost never take someone up on, oh yeah, you should read that. Okay, I'll look for it. I almost never do. I almost never do. Fortunately for me, I got pointed in the direction of Terry Pratchett by one of the people I work with. She is the Supreme Imperial Empress of the Universe and is to be congratulated for good taste. And I was very glad to have found Terry Pratchett. So yeah, the Earth world, this life as heaven. Qualifiers there would have to be, well, what kind of a reward is having to work all your life, be hungry, cold, tired, miserable, and in danger, in some cases, all your life? I guess the concept is, well, you're not bored. You always have something to do. I guess if you've got nothing else to compare it to, it would be kind of difficult to consider the average life on Earth for a human being to be heaven. But if it is, then you have to ask yourself, well, if you came to heaven, and this is it, where did you come to heaven from? Probably the same place you... Probably the same place you go to when you go to sleep. Strange questions, I know, but as I said, that's what this whole setup, this whole International Detector of Dragons from Outer Space is about. Questions, strange questions, unanswerable questions. But certainly questions whose answers, if ever found, that affect everybody. And the more I think about them and the more I pose them, the deeper I begin to realize my ignorance is of world religions and of philosophies. I'm going to put a link on the IDDFOS homepage, somewhere down at the bottom towards the right, to a website called Squashed Philosophers. I don't know if you've ever seen it. I'm going to put a link to that because I found it a few months ago and thought, well, if I want to educate myself on this stuff and I've only got a certain amount of time, this is certainly a good place to go. Something like Cliff Notes. Well, maybe not Cliff Notes. Major philosophers, major world philosophers over time, from ancient to contemporary, boiled down, the essence of their work boiled down into much smaller versions. They even give you average read times for how long it would take you. I think it's called Squashed Philosophers. I'll look again. But that's worth a visit. Earth and Life as Heaven. I don't know. I have a hard time with that one. I mean, we get a lot of spiritual leaders, meditation masters, people from all different disciplines and faiths telling us that this world is an illusion. That this world, this life is merely an illusion. And then you have physics backing that up by pretty much proving for us that most of every atom consists of nothing. And that's all well and good, but I wouldn't recommend telling somebody that this life and this world is an illusion while they're getting a root canal, because it'll certainly seem real enough to them at the time. And if you've got stomach pains or you've got some kind of a chronic illness, if you've got pain, essentially, the world just gets realer and realer. There's nothing illusory about it. So I don't know. I don't know about life and Earth as heaven. I also don't know about where we go when we sleep. I wouldn't worry about a stop sign. That's just a symbol, and you don't have to obey all symbols. You're a free human being. You're free to cause accidents just as I'm free to stop at the stop sign to not cause accidents. Isn't it amazing the freedom we have? Did that sound bitter? Good. You better park the car and go inside and calm down a little bit. First destination reached. I'm going to play another promo for another podcast. I don't know which one it is yet, but I'll be back afterwards. Okay. Whoever that promo was for, go check them out. They're good. They're fun. I wouldn't have played it otherwise. I'll confess, I have no idea which one it was because I haven't picked it out yet. But I'm trying to get my cues lined up. I'm recording this in a certain order. Do you care? Is this important for you to know? Probably not, but I can't think of anything else to say. I'll also confess that I have completely forgotten what it was we were talking about. Please forgive me, I was distracted by two adult human beings wandering diagonally across an intersection while not paying any particular attention to what was going on them. Yeah, it did appear as if there were cars. I mean, they looked like real cars to me, zooming in and around about them. Maybe they were phantom people and didn't really exist. I got off on some kind of tangent, I'm sure I did. I can't remember what it was I was talking about, honestly, before I got out of the car to go in there to go shopping. Well, we are off to our second destination. I think we were on the subject of the afterlife in general. Where do you go when you sleep? Where do you go when you're dead? Where have you gone already? I think I'm going to try and find some information, a link up or something, on a woman named Pam Reynolds. I don't know whether you've heard this name before or not. If you're into the paranormal, you like hearing about ghosts and psychic stuff, you know, it doesn't mean that you're willing to rush to every psychic fair. Actually, I've never been to a psychic fair myself, and I have no inclination to go to a psychic fair. And it doesn't mean that you subscribe to the Weekly World News or the National Enquirer. It's just fun to listen to. It's a fun topic. It's almost, in a way, programs that deal with that type of thing are a lot like this one, because just as it says on my homepage, they could talk for hours and not be wrong because there's no way to prove any of it. But if anything ever even came close to proving consciousness outside the body, it would probably be the case of Pam Reynolds. The shorthand version of it, the fit-in-a-nutshell version of it, is this woman had a nearly inoperable tumor in her brain. It was a kind of an aneurysm that hadn't gone yet, essentially. It was an aneurysm that was ready to go, and if it did, she could die instantly. and according to whatever scans, information, and tests they could do, the only way to get it out was through an extremely experimental surgery done by this one particular physician. And the process was, essentially the process was that you died on the table during the operation. It was expected. It was planned for. You were supposed to. The whole body gets chilled down to something like 56 degrees. I really should have looked this up and read up on it before I started jabbering on about this. The whole body gets chilled down to 56 degrees. Nearly all of the blood is drained out of your body. I think the purpose behind this, of course, is to deflate the aneurysm so that it can be worked with, so that it can be gotten out, or more accessible, or whatever the procedures are. So your body is drained of blood. You are, of course, made unconscious for the surgery to happen. Your ears are packed with cotton. And during the operation, you die. And I forget for just how long that actually takes place. I forget for just how long you have a total flatline on the heart, on the electroencephalogram, whatever, what is it that measures brain waves? Total flatline on the brain waves, zero brain activity. And if the operation is a success, they are able to revive you. In her case, it was a success. But she was one of those many people that come back from a surgical experience or a near-death experience. Essentially, she had an NDE. But she probably got about as near to it as anyone, because she actually was dead, clinically dead, for an extended amount of time. I'm going to look this up. Before the end of this installment, I am going to look it up and find out just how long she was out. And then I'm going to put some links on, because it's just a fascinating story. She had all kinds of things to say about who was doing what near her, what problems they were running into during surgery, what the implement looked like that he specifically used when he first went in to do to get at her brain. The music that they were playing during close up and clean up, when she supposedly was supposed to be completely unconscious. And the thing about most of these other stories is that they're just not that well documented. The people that come back and say, oh, I left my body and I saw my relatives waiting down the hall. Well, you could manufacture anything like that in your imagination. And in most operations, most surgeries, while you are put completely under, you do not die and flatline on the brain. In this woman's case, she died and flatlined all brain activity, and apparently came up with views and information that just would not be available to someone if they were just making it up. Pam Reynolds. If you don't want to wait for the end of the podcast and you're near a computer, go ahead and check it out. What is this? I'm on a two-lane road with a concrete separator in the middle of it, and off to the side of the road looks like about three or four reams of loose paper blowing around like a snow globe here. Glad I could share that with you. Did you enjoy that visual? I'll try and think of another one. Fascinating, wasn't it? I apologize. I'm not terribly sleep deprived, but I am tired. There is another interesting aspect of the psyche, or the mind, or the soul, or whatever you want to call the essence of who you are, the emergent property of your physical characteristics. And that is the fact that while it seems one and the same as the body and the brain, I wonder if your mind dies, or portions of your mind disappear, go away, whatever, just like your body does. Because if you consider that if you're 14 or 21 or 28, let's say you're 21. You know that at one point in your life, obviously, just like everyone else, at some point, you were 7 years old. You probably have pictures. You may or may not have pictures. But you were 7 years old once. There was a seven-year-old kid named you who was you in the year during which you were 7 years old. Now, of course, if you were to go looking for that seven-year-old, you wouldn't find them. And there's a popular theory, I don't know whether it's true or folklore, that everything in the body is replaced. Everything, every cell, every element, from the bones outward, is replaced completely in 7 years by whatever it is that's needed to be there. It could even be 8 years, whatever. Essentially, that seven-year-old body is gone. That body that you were riding around in when you were seven no longer exists. It's already organic matter wasting into the earth or recycling into the ecosphere in whatever form it took. Dead skin, evaporation, bowel movements, whatever. The expulsion of whatever dead materials over the course of the 7, 8, 9 years it took to replace that 7-year-old with a 16-year-old. Just got rid of that body. The body isn't around anymore, but you're not dead. That body is dead, but you're not dead. Is there a portion of your mind that goes with it? You certainly don't have the mind of a 7-year-old, but can you recall all the details and the immediate concerns and memories that you had, say, on your 7th birthday? I know I can't. I hear that you can regress, of course, into childhood through hypnosis. And I haven't done any research on it, so I don't know whether the information that you come up with is absolutely true or not. That, of course, is verifiable through older relatives or school records or pictures that other people may have taken that you've never seen. So portions of that mind, that memory anyway, must still exist within your own mind. They're just faded. They don't need to be accessed, so they aren't. So for the sake of argument, if you call it every 7 years that your body is replaced, then essentially you've left behind your body when you were 7, when you were 14, when you were 21, when you were 28, several times during your lifetime. It's been an outrageously gradual process, but the mind's been riding around in the process of replacement that you call your body. I don't know. Weird thing to think about. Well, we're at our second location, so I'm going inside. Here's another promo for another podcast, the name of which I can't tell you because I haven't got it picked out yet. And I'll be back in a bit. Well, things are looking up. Things are getting brighter. Oh, man. We have a winner for this week's weird or amusing thing. And it's about time, because we haven't had one since episode 1. And I'm going to change the rules a little bit, if there ever were any rules. Why? Because I can. It's my podcast. The rules allow for magazine covers. And no, we're not going to talk about anything seen on the National Star, the Weekly World News, or the Inquirer, nothing like that. That's like saying you found a raisin in a box of Raisin Bran. No. The magazine is called Shape. I don't know what the month is. I didn't look closely enough for the month. But it had listed on its features all the different stories. One of the articles, Stressed? Here are 10 real-world fixes. And in parentheses underneath that, no meditation involved. Of course, on the cover of Shape magazine, there is the studio model image of yet another impossible human being. It almost makes you wish you were born and raised and lived in magazine cover land, where everyone has perfect teeth, tight buns, and washboard abs. So yes, Stressed, here are 10 real-world fixes. Now this can be proven, of course. All you've got to do is, well then again, if you hear this in a couple of months, it'll be gone already, but those of you who subscribe to Shape magazine, please verify that for me. Please provide corroborating evidence that I'm not making it up. 10 real-life fixes, no meditation involved. You may be stressed, but we've got your fixes for you. Not your solutions, your fixes. Fixes is a lot faster to say than solutions. Solutions might solve the problems. Fixes will patch it over. Get it taken care of real quick. This is the real world. This is the real world, damn it. Meditation? For God's sakes, what are you going to do? Stop to think about it? You're stressed. You don't have time to stop and think about it. You got to fix it now. Here's 10 ways. 10 ways from us. Buy this magazine. You'll look like this lady. You'll look like this woman if you buy this magazine. I don't know. That struck me as funny. It just stood out. It stood out from all those other weird things that they want people to buy. I could, of course, have picked up a little pamphlet that showed my lucky numbers. There it was, my lucky numbers for the month, and I passed it up. I mean, if I was really curious about my lucky numbers, all I gotta do is wait and get to heaven and get to my universal library of acquired knowledge that transcends. Now this is another little caveat I'm going to put in there. It transcends realities. It's a library that covers not only everything that has happened in this universe, but everything that has or will happen in alternate universes. So the universe that proceeds wherein Jane, whoever the hell, drops the egg that she was about to cook for whoever, it'll cover that universe that proceeds from that point, and it will cover the universe wherein she did not drop the egg and had time to eat her breakfast and didn't get frustrated and leave for work early. And so, well-nourished, she left for work in that universe and was involved in a fatal car accident, never got married, and never, of course, gave birth to the person who discovered the cure for cancer. All kinds of things can happen. So all I gotta do is go to that library in my heaven. That's all I gotta do. Find out what my lucky numbers were. In this universe, I'll be reasonable, just in this universe that I'm in now, just in this timeline that I'm following now, I could find out that when I was 22, And I got mail from Ed McMahon saying I could already be a winner, and I looked at it and laughed and threw it out, that actually was the winning number. And that was a good portion of the luck I was supposed to have for most of my life. I could have been a multimillionaire at 22, but unknowingly threw out the winning number and they had to pick an alternate. I could find that out in that library. Or, of course, I could find out... Wow, that's loud, isn't it? Of course, I could find out which convenience store was selling the correct lottery, would have given me the correct lottery number had I decided to buy a ticket on a certain day. I could go to the library and find that out, too. Was it Martin Gardner or George Gamow? I think it was George Gamow. Very old work. Well, actually not really very old. It's within my lifetime. Does that make it a very old work? I guess so. Book called 1-2-3 Infinity. May even be out of print. I'm not sure. It did some exploration of the... I think it was one of the first to document and introduce the infinite number of monkeys theory. I'm continuing along the lines of multiple universes. I've already left heaven. The infinite number of monkeys randomly banging away on an infinite number of typewriters because of the inescapable law of averages. When you're dealing with infinity, people have corrupted this. People have warped this. They've said 1,000 monkeys or 1,000,000 monkeys. No, it has to be an infinite number of monkeys and an infinite number of typewriters. What specific species of monkey? Nobody says. Some form of monkey that can push down keys randomly and keep at it for a certain amount of time. It's fantasy, folks. Unanswerable questions. If you're having a hard time with this, I can't help you. But yes, an infinite number, both in monkeys and typewriters, dictates, mandates, not only that they have to produce among them the complete works of Shakespeare, but they have to produce among them an infinite number of the complete works of Shakespeare, along with an infinite number of everything else that was ever written in any language using those letters on that keyboard, and an infinite number of anything else that ever will be written in any language using those letters. I mean, that is the full implication of the infinite monkeys and the infinite typewriters. And it was a way to describe branching alternate universes. It was a way to describe the possibility of an infinite number of possibilities and what would ensue if that were the case. Why did I start talking about that? And how did I get there? I got there from a library. Oh, I started talking about that because of the size of a library that held the acquired knowledge of the universe. Okay, we're back to my heaven again. A library that would hold not only the history of everything that has or will happen to everyone on every intelligent planet in existence, but a library that would hold the alterations, the slight variations, the branchings according to random chance. That would have to be a mighty big library. And you know what? If I were a supreme being that was capable of producing existence itself, that's probably the kind of library I'd want. But I suppose if you're an author, eventually you're going to get bored reading your own stuff. It almost touches back to the last podcast, number 6, where we talked about role-playing games. One of the heaviest elements that I didn't even bring up, not even once. In role-playing games, tabletop or LARPing, so far as I know. No, I'm not going to say about LARPing because I don't have the knowledge or the experience. But for tabletop, definitely dice rolling.
six-sided, 20-sided, all kinds of dice being rolled, where the people creating the universe don't absolutely know what's going to happen. Nothing is certain. And if I was looking to stop being bored as a supreme being that knew everything that was going to happen or would happen or will happen, maybe I'd try to trick myself into rolling some dice. And again, that goes against somebody's quote. That definitely goes against somebody's quote. I'm hearing it in my head. God does not play at dice. Who said that? Einstein? Was it Einstein? Sorry, I'm taking up a lot of your time just musing about this. So this is the third stop. After this, I'm going to play wrap-up. In the meantime, we're going to hear another podcast promo. And thank you. I'll move on now. We shall continue now. Beginning with life's embarrassing moments. Just had one. Fortunately, it was only embarrassing to myself because I don't think anyone else was watching or knew. I think I just spent about 45 seconds patting my pockets, sitting here. I'm sitting here in this car, patting my pockets, looking on the floor, patting my pockets again, looking on the dashboard, looking in the ignition, trying to find the key to the car. I was, of course, holding it in my mouth. Oh, you must have done that sometime. You must have done that yourself, one way or another, looking for something. I mean, the classic is, where are my glasses? Where are my glasses? And they're on your head. See, I got something universal to mankind into this podcast, one way or another. Some interesting variations of what people would like as their heaven. Oh, I'm sorry. It must be nice to be a whatever you are. What are you, a diplomat or something? I would bet in some people's heaven, they could drive around where they used to live with traffic that simulated perfectly everything they used to deal with when they dealt with traffic and drivers of less than desirable intelligence. And in their heaven, when someone cut them off or tailgated, there could, of course, be a million-pound rectangular car-shaped weight that would magically appear and flatten the vehicle and then zip right back up into the sky so that other cars could drive over the completely flattened wreckage. In somebody's heaven, there's a 50-caliber machine gun mounted in the space where an engine normally would be that they could flip up and hunt other cars with. In some people's heaven, the movie star or group of movie stars that they consider to be the most attractive and sexy would be waiting for them, of course, to spend the rest of eternity on an intimate basis. Well, there's two things wrong with that last one that I can think of right off the bat. One, you would have to know that these are artificial representations of whoever it is you're thinking of. Because I would find it very difficult to believe that the actual celebrities, models, movie stars, or whoever it is, even personal acquaintances from your own life, that would consider it their heaven to be an intimate conference with you for eternity, or me for eternity. What is it that would make that their heaven? Not much, I would think. So they'd have to be artificial, and you would, of course, know that. And even if that weren't the case, even if they were the genuine article, could you really spend an eternity in romantic liaison for the sole purpose of getting it on with movie star X, Y, or Z, or all three, for eternity? Forever? Because that's the classic caveat. That's, hey, eternal reward. This is what we're talking about here, folks. So if you've already written out your answer and you want to reconsider, by all means, send them both. Reconsider, make a first answer, and then a second answer once you thought about it. Whatever. Write something. I got nothing here, folks. I'm on podcast 7. I haven't got anything to read from listeners. I'm going about this the wrong way, I'm sure of that. You, mister, are an idiot. I'm sorry. I was at an intersection 2 miles back waiting my turn. And he turned right behind me, cutting off the car that I was allowing to go. Just now, slowing down, maybe making a right, maybe not making a right, depending on how he felt that particular moment. But everybody else behind him had damn well better just wait till he made up his mind as he was rolling. That million-pound weight heaven is looking more and more attractive. Now I will give the charitable variation of this particular moment in the universe. That poor livery driver, because that's what it was a New York black cab of some kind. That poor driver had a gray-haired woman in the back who was probably putting him through his own private, real-world, present-day hell by giving him incorrect, conflicting, faulty, rapid, loud, and screeching direction. And there I was, honking at him, like a meanie. I am such a big meanie. Shame on me. I'm over it. I think science fiction, or aspects of science fiction, have already attempted to create the heaven scenario. The perfect example being the holodeck, The Next Generation. Where you actually can spend as much time, at least as your duties allow, sitting in conversation with Isaac Asimov, Stephen Hawking, Einstein. I know Asimov wasn't on the show, but just the brilliant minds that you may or may not want to converse with, or on the beach with the Swedish bikini team, whatever your particular fantasy that day is. I don't know how they allot time in the holodeck, whether you have to be an officer, whether the expendable grunts don't get to spend more than 20 minutes in there, and the officers can spend 3 hours or whatever. I don't know what the deal is with that. But science fiction has tried to create that. Let's see, let's make my little heaven. I will program a scenario on the holodeck. But if it was to be absolutely, completely, and 100% accurate, I know that Stephen Hawking, Einstein, and Isaac Asimov would not want to spend 3 hours sitting and talking to me. Maybe Asimov would. I would guilt him into it. I mean, it's the only thing that makes me worth listening to at all. I'm about to tell you the only thing. The only reason you should be listening to anything I say is because I shook Isaac Asimov's hand after getting his autograph. I said something nice about his book, and because I said something nice, he hugged my mother. So not only did I shake his hand, but he hugged my mother. If you'd care to send something to the P.O. box for Annum 5, I will touch it and return it to you for a fee. And you will possess then something that was touched by a person whose mother was hugged by Isaac Asimov. Wouldn't the joke be on me if feedback eventually coming in from this podcast clued me in on maybe 60 or 70 other people per convention had that same thing happen to them. I didn't witness it. I don't know how many little 14-year-old, what was I, 14, 12? Something or other. Young enough not to be going into New York all by myself. Not in 1972, 3 or 4. So you go to a convention and your mom mother gets hugged by a man that's in the encyclopedia, the Columbia Encyclopedia. While he was still alive, he was in the Columbia Encyclopedia. That's success. Oh, that's certainly high accomplishment. All right. It's coming down to wind down time. This has been installment, transmission, audio offering, episode 7 of International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. I am going to include another song, because I like them. I hope you like them too. They're not meant to be high art. They're not meant to be the best that was ever written by humanity, but they're supposed to be enjoyable. If you don't enjoy them, you skip past them. At the far end of the song, I'm just going to say my quick goodbyes, and that'll be it. Here, have a listen.
Barnaby Wright, strike up our tandy.
Aye, sir!
We're known as candy buccaneers and pirate kings of pleasure. We never hunt for very gold, cause candy is our treasure. The very thought of pirate loot is quite enough for us. But when we sight a candy bar, we shout and sing this chorus.
Wasn't too bad. I liked that. Kind of catchy. Thank you very much for listening to IDD FOS number 7. In number 8, the next podcast, I'll be explaining why this podcast is called International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. In the meantime, I still hope all goes well with you. Thank you again, and best of days.